Deutsche Welle, Africa Link.
Hello, it's Monday the 15th of May. You're listening to DW's Africa Link program with me, Jane Ayeko-Kumet.
And I am Abubakar Jalo.
In this edition, court in Zambia acquits opposition leader of laser charges but holds him in custody awaiting hearing on treason accusation. His supporters see the ruling differently.
This arrest of HH and subsequently detention was politically motivated, and this has been proved.
President Jacob Zuma's unending troubles. South Africans now want Parliament to pass a vote of no confidence.
The real issues is we all, I think, now agree that we have a bad president.
And on social media, the killing of popular actor Mandla Tsuwayo has sparked another debate of gun violence in South Africa. We will have your responses shortly.
Stay tuned for all that and much more to come on the program. But first, let's listen to what's been happening around the world.
I'm Shay Meineke with DW News. Heavy gunfire has erupted across the Ivory Coast on Monday as mutinous soldiers in the West African country say they are rebelling over a lack of payments promised to them by the government of President Alassane Ouattara, who was elected by rebel-backed support in 2011. A spokesman for the disgruntled soldiers said they would not lay down their arms and would fight to the end, while the government responded saying it would maintain a firm line on January discussions when the government promised to pay the ex-rebels around 18,000 euros each. In his first foreign trip, newly elected French President Emmanuel Macron has met with German Chancellor Angela Merkel in Berlin. Speaking at a news conference, Merkel said she would hope to rejuvenate a Paris-Berlin alliance.
I am the last person who is going to come and say what France has to do. I fully trust the president knows what to do and will explain it to us. We will then talk about our cooperation. He will represent the interests of his country, and I will present Germany's interests, and I'm very certain that we have a lot in common.
Ganz sicher, dass es so viel Überlappungen gibt.
Germany has warned it could pull NATO troops out of Turkey after Ankara refused Berlin lawmakers access to soldiers at an Incirlik airbase where some 260 German military personnel are stationed. Sources have reported that Turkish authorities refused access because Germany granted political asylum to Turkish soldiers who were accused by Ankara of participating in last year's failed coup. This news comes to you from DW, Germany's international broadcaster. Nearly 1,000 opposition protesters have rallied against South African President Jacob Zuma on Monday, with many waving signs and chanting for the president to leave office. At the Constitutional Court in Johannesburg, Julius Malema, leader of the Economic Freedom Fighters Party, told a crowd of protesters that lawmakers should seek a secretive motion of no confidence to have the president removed.
Don't be intimidated by criminals. Yeah. The masses are on your side because you are on the side of the people. And when you are on the side of the people, you'll never go wrong.
Boko Haram militants have struck again in Nigeria, killing at least 6 farmers in the heavy-hit northeastern city of Maiduguri, where at least 20,000 people have been killed since the extremists began their insurgency in 2009. Witnesses said the farmers were attacked by machete-wielding men on motorcycles. Northeast Nigeria is in the grip of severe food shortages after farmers missed 3 consecutive rainy seasons because of conflict. And now in sports, the top 2 Bundesliga football squads faced off against each other in week 33 action on Sunday, with number 1 Bayern Munich winning in a thrilling match against number 2 Leipzig by the score of 5-4. The win gives Bayern a commanding 79 total points on the year, which is 13 more points than any other club across the Bundesliga league. For more news and information, visit our website at dw.com. I'm Shay Meineke.
Welcome to Africa Link with me, Jane Ayeko Kemet.
And me, Abubakar Jalo.
Now, we start the program in Zambia, where a magistrate's court has acquitted opposition leader Hakainde Hichilema of lesser charges and condemned police for abusing his rights. Hichilema, however, remains in custody awaiting hearing of treason charges next Monday. From Zambia capital Lusaka, here is Kathy Sikombe.
It was another packed day at the Lusaka Magistrates Court complex as hundreds of people flocked to the heavily guarded court premises with armed police in riot gear surrounding the area. Entry to the courtroom was restricted as many people were turned away. Opposition leader Hakainde Hichilema, who looked calm, chose to remain quiet during the court proceedings. Delivering his ruling, Magistrate Greenwell Malumani said the state failed to prove that the opposition leader, Hakainde Hichilema, used insulting language towards police officers when he was arrested at his home a month ago. He says due to the state witnesses' failure to show any single grain of evidence, police officers failed to show why they arrested Hichilema. I spoke to Bwalya Nondo, a spokesperson for the opposition National Restoration Party, NAREP, shortly after the opposition leader was acquitted.
We said this arrest of HH and subsequently detention was politically motivated, and this has been proved. So our worry is that where are we going as a country?
Meanwhile, Magistrate David Samsamba, who is presiding over the opposition leader Hakainde Hichilema's treason case, has set 22nd May as the date on which he will rule on whether the alleged treason charge be referred to the High Court for committal or dismiss the charge. Sam Piri, a ruling Patriotic Front supporter, insists all charges against the opposition leader should be done away with.
I think they just have to release the guy. It's everyone's concern because things are at a standstill. We can't move on. You know, we really need justice to prevail.
The UPND leader was arrested more than a month ago when hundreds of armed police officers ransacked his home, damaging property and beating up occupants and stealing an undisclosed amount of money.
Kathy Sikombe in Lusaka.
And Jen, this is a story we are monitoring on our Facebook page, DW Africa.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, a quick response here from Isaac Ehoza Godwin from Liberia.
Mm-hmm.
He said the government just wants to tarnish the reputation of the opposition leader by taking this case to the extreme.
Some political voices there. We'll get back to that a little later. But we come back here in Germany. All attention was in the western state of Nordrhein-Westphalia last night. With some 13 million voters, Germany's most populous province was electing a new state parliament. The result was a blow to German Social Democratic Party as Merkel's Christian Democratic Union took the win of the day in a province that has for a long time been the stronghold for the Social Democrats. The polls are seen as a test for Germany's next national elections scheduled for September 29th this year. From Berlin, Daniel Pels reports.
Chancellor Angela Merkel's Christian Democratic Party was still in an enthusiastic mood on Monday, but the chancellor was not. Angela Merkel maintained her usual caution, reminding the party that next September's national elections are yet to be won.
Es beginnt jetzt eine neue Phase im
A new phase of the federal election campaigns is starting now. We'll do what we can to work together for a successful campaign for the national elections on September 24th, like we did it in the provincial elections.
24. September und Bundestagswahl.
But yesterday's polls in North Rhine-Westphalia are a major boost for the chancellor and her party. The Christian Democrats managed to beat the Social Democrats that had been ruling the province for all but 5 years since 1966. But even Mrs. Merkel admitted that the polls in North Rhine-Westphalia were largely about provincial politics. The province is battling high unemployment rates, crime, and one of Germany's worst public school systems. Ulrich von Ahlemann is a professor of political science at the University of Düsseldorf.
Also ich würde schon sagen, dass die Landesthemen überwiegen.
National political issues did play a role, but provincial issues were dominating these elections. I reckon that about two-thirds were provincial issues and one-third national issues. The most important provincial issues were education, security, and the state of the economy.
Nämlich innere Sicherheit, Bildung und Wirtschaft.
The national elections, on the other hand, are going to be dominated by other issues such as unemployment, health, and social security. But Mrs. Merkel's chances to win the race have also improved because the polls in North Rhine-Westphalia were a major blow for her main rival. Social Democratic Party leader Martin Schulz had managed to gain some ground against the chancellor since he became the party's flagbearer in January. He was born in North Rhine-Westphalia and had campaigned vigorously for his party there. But his popularity ratings had been dwindling even before Sunday's poll. On Monday, a disheartened Mr. Schulz faced the media in Berlin.
Schwerer Moment, den wir gestern Abend wegstecken müssen.
Last evening was a difficult moment for us. The party leadership will meet to analyze what went wrong. But one thing is clear. We have a long and stony road ahead of us until the elections on September 24th. It will be hard, but the Social Democrats are a party that is ready to fight.
That report was filed by Daniel Pels. And now back to Africa, and this time around to South Africa, where President Jacob Zuma's problems do not seem to come to an end too soon. Today again, hundreds of people braved the bitterly cold weather and marched to the Constitutional Court in Johannesburg. They wanted to demonstrate their support for Parliament to hold a vote of no confidence against the president. The Constitutional Court had submissions by advocates of the opposition parties and civil society. A ruling is expected soon, Sobri Govender reports.
The opposition parties and civil society organizations have submitted to the Constitutional Court that the Speaker of Parliament has an obligation to allow for a secret ballot in the vote of no confidence against President Jacob Zuma. The opposition parties have called for a secret ballot in order to protect ruling ANC MPs who also want Zuma to be removed from office. But this application has been opposed by the Speaker Baleka Mbete and also President Zuma. The people who gathered outside the precinct of the Constitutional Court felt that it was necessary for a secret ballot because it was of concern to all citizens and the protection of the constitution of the country. The leader of the UDM, Bantu Olumisa, is one of the main applicants to the Constitutional Court.
The ANC MPs will have to choose whether they are on the side of the people who pay for their salaries, who voted them to be in Parliament. We are looking forward to a final decision on this issue. The decision here will be final and it will not be appealable.
Mark Awood of the Save South Africa organization says that they are supporting the application for a secret ballot on the vote of no confidence because President Zuma is no longer morally upright to continue as president of the country.
The real issues is we all, I think, now agree that we have a bad president. We have a president who is failing in government. We have a president who appears to have been corrupted. When that happens, what do we do to try to restore our democracy and try to restore justice in the country?
Sobri Govender sent us that report from South Africa. Now, Abu, I know that President Jacob Zuma is one person that attracts lots of clicks from our website.
Absolutely. We do have a couple of responses here. We have this from Francis Zira from Nigeria, who said, Zuma has showed his incompetency, especially on the xenophobic cases. International relations have declined. South Africa is no longer great. He needs to resign or be impeached.
Certainly, that's from Nigeria. And I can see another one coming in from Ghana here from a one Gabriel Bokoye, who says Zuma should resign because South Africa's economy is in crisis and he couldn't... That's the same one that you read, Abu, right? I think we are seeing the same things coming here.
Without mistake, let me just take you to a different story, which is the killing of Mandla Tswayo in South Africa
Still in South Africa.
What happened there was that this Manda is a popular actor in South Africa. Mm-hmm. He's been acting on a series called Generations, and he was shot.
Remember that series when we're still kids.
Yeah, mm-hmm. He was shot while some smugglers were trying to make away with properties of some girls. Anyways, let me just jump to the responses. Ulrich van Vuren said, horrific, they took his life and then his shoes, crime is out of control, condolences to his family.
Yeah. And I also see Chikwaza Mputusha here saying the lawlessness in this country is getting out of hand. I wonder if those in the ruling realize that we are a country in crisis. That yeah. message is also directed to President Jacob Zuma.
Yeah, a quick one there from Coach who said, judging by Zuma's laid-back attitude, no, they do not.
You're listening to DW's Africa Link program coming to you live from our studios in Bonn, Germany. I am Ayeko Kwemet.
And I am Abubakar Jalo.
Coming up next, is the future of traditional medicine at stake? We speak to some Malewans.
I don't think I would have any problems with using herbs. There are certain home remedies that a person can use. For instance, I know of aloe vera, which can help cure a number of illnesses.
And why are Kenyans suspicious about the import of maize from Mexico? Stay tuned for your responses on that story shortly.
Okay, but first we go to what it means today. While at school, children learn subjects which will help them to find a good job in the future. On the other hand, family teaches children about habits and discipline that can shape their entire life. Now, today is the International Day of Families, and the theme is Families, Education and Well-being. With this, the UN wants to raise awareness on the role of families and family-oriented policies in promoting education and overall well-being of their members. But what is family life like in a conflict situation? Muhammad Alamin reports from northern Nigeria that has been locked in conflict over years.
Families in northeastern Nigeria have little to celebrate this year because of the effects of Boko Haram insurgency. Many families were torn separated as a result, and thousands of children have not had a chance to have an education, adding more misery to the already disintegrated society in the fact that the Chibok girls who were recently released by the militants have not yet been reunited with their families. Most families live in camps for the internally displaced people or IDPs. Sarah Umaru, a mother of seven children from Baga Kukau local government area of Borno State, is one of the IDPs living in Bakasi IDP camp in Maiduguri.
Before we were displaced by Boko Haram insurgency, our children were going to school, but now all of them are out of school. We are worried. We don't know the future of our sons and daughters. No food, no shelter, no education. This is bad. Our youth are not working. We are crying for help. Let someone come to our aid, please.
Boko Haram opposes Western education and has murdered 600 teachers and displaced 19,000 in an effort to stop children from getting education they needed. Abubakar Baba Abdullahi, a political analyst from Maiduguri University, believes that the situation is going to affect the society and the country in general.
Most of them are out of schools and they may be moving helter-skelter looking for where to survive. Some of them will be interacting with bad children who will influence their character, their behavior. In fact, they will become nuisance to the society, of which some of them will jump into activities that will lead into criminality, which will affect the peaceful coexistence of the entire northeastern state, or not even northeastern state, the entire nation.
Chibok schoolgirls abducted by Boko Haram 3 years ago, and many more are examples of how these disintegrated families and their girls have missed out on education. Winnie Bianyima, Oxfam chief executive who recently visited Maiduguri, has this to say.
The Chibok girls are a case, one of many cases. Thousands of girls have been kidnapped. Thousands of boys have been kidnapped and forced to join the Boko Haram rebellion. This is something that the people here know very, very well, and that is sad. We would like to see not just a military solution, but maybe also some political solutions that could lure young boys, young men back in and to invest in peace.
Although government and humanitarian agencies are catering for some children's education in IDP camps in northeastern Nigeria, more need to be done in order to save over 600,000 children who are unlikely to return to school without some form of intervention.
Muhammad Alamin with that very touching report on this International Day of Families. Now, Abu, you have a family. I have a family. We all have families that we come from. What have they been talking about this day?
Well, I do have a family, but we're back in Africa.
Yeah.
Anyways, here a response here from Petrida Paul from Tanzania, who said, I plan to commemorate this day with my family and friends with a good dinner.
Oh, that sounds a good one. And we have one coming from Nigeria, from Peter. He's writing from Enugu State. And he says, I intend to commemorate the International Day of Families by making sure that I visit all my family members and possibly organize a great together dinner for my parents and siblings. That's a good one there.
We do have a few more to this. Actually, the responses have been enormous. A user who said, I will commemorate the day by spending it with my parents and siblings in Monrovia. All schools and work activities will be suspended for my family. And Amar Adam from Ghana said, for the past 5 years now, I think the world is in turmoil. Families bombed, families trafficked like commodities. Humanity is failing. So it's better to mourn and plan to celebrate this.
Yeah, it's interesting. We have to keep life as simple as we could. Yesterday, of course, we had ladies, their mothers were having a good time. I had a good time. My boys gave me a surprise breakfast there. And today it's family day. I'm still in the mood of celebrating, especially with this great weather. But we'll come back to that a little later.
Health check.
Now, once upon a time, traditional medicine used to be the dominant medical system available to millions of people in Africa. Today, many Africans have turned to modern medicine. Nevertheless, there are strong indications that many people, not only in Africa, but across the world, rely on traditional medicine or health practices. Scholars in the field suggest reconciliation between traditional and contemporary medicine. To find out what some Africans make of this, we went to Malawi, where government is debating regulating the practice, and now Miriam Kalezi reports.
Lifa Jelasi from the central part of Malawi's capital, Lilongwe, has been practicing traditional medicine for over a decade now. She says she learned the trade from her parent. Her father was a respected traditional doctor in their village many years ago. Jelasi claims to have healed hundreds of people using her indigenous medicine, and she claims some of her clients are well-respected people in society. She now practices her medical profession along Lilongwe River in the capital of Malawi, where she gets her customers from across the city. I do not practice witchcraft. I treat people according to their ailment, and I think anyone can take this medicine. I believe it is effective because we get feedback from our customers when they get better. Although many people in the country believe that traditional medicine cures various diseases, many do not like to be associated with traditional doctors. Some think the practice is backward and associate it to witchcraft. But Hastings Kukada, another traditional healer, refutes the allegation.
A traditional healer is different to a witch doctor. What we do here is heal people, and not the other way around. These medicines and witchcraft, they differ.
Away from witchcraft, others like Matthews Malata, an environmental journalist, simply have other reservations.
There are issues of dosage. These people, they don't have the know-how. At the same time, you're also looking at the sources of their medicine. We're not sure how safe they are. We have had cases whereby people can develop cancer because of the intoxication. I believe it's always good to go to the hospital, meet the people who have been trained as doctors or medical personnel, and they will prescribe to me the drug which they feel is going to sort out my problem, because those people sometimes they just do guesswork.
But Joyf Paliani is a young Malawian who views traditional medicine as an alternative to modern medicine.
I don't think I would have any problems with using herbs. For instance, there are certain home remedies that a person can use. For instance, I know of aloe vera, which can help cure a number of illnesses. It helps in detoxification. And I don't think using such things are to be considered sin before God, because I want to differentiate going to a herbalist who sells herbs to cure for various diseases and going to witch doctors.
The practice of traditional medicine in Malawi is not documented because the practice is usually passed from one generation to the other. Malawi's Minister of Health, Peter Kumpalume, is now pushing for its regulation.
We in Malawi are equally advanced in terms of traditional medicine, but the truth of the matter is that we have not been able to control our fashion process, the policies around, and the researching into what is the effective beat of any particular medicine.
In the 21st century, modern pharmaceuticals and medical procedures remain inaccessible to large numbers of African people due to their relatively high cost and concentration of healthy facilities in urban centers.
Miriam Kalezi in Malawi with that report on traditional medicine in Africa. Now, for the latest on sports, DW's Jonathan Harding joined me just before studio time to talk about the Bundesliga as the end of the season draws closer. Now, we have some matches to go, but we certainly know the winners and the losers, who is lying where and who is taking which position. But we had also some interesting matches over the weekend, and I asked Jonathan what his most striking moment was over the weekend.
Well, I mean, yeah, 9 games at the same time. Mm-hmm. Very exciting, 37 mm-hmm. goals. Bayern Munich, though, has to be the biggest moment of the weekend. Mm-hmm. They played against Leipzig in Leipzig, and they won 5-4, which is absolutely unbelievable. There were, I think, 3 goals in the last 6 minutes. Very entertaining game, but from Leipzig's perspective, they cannot believe that they have lost this game. They were 3-1 up and then 4-2 up. And Bayern Munich doing what they are famous for, winning. Mm-hmm. At the end, and Arjen Robben scoring a fantastic goal. I think it was important for Bayern to show that they were still, you know, top of the table, still the number one in town.
Mm.
But for Leipzig, that's a missed opportunity.
Certainly, it's a missed opportunity. But we've seen where Leipzig has come from and how very good they've been performing. And then just towards the last bit, this comes as a blow. Do you see it the same way?
Yes, definitely. They've not been the best that we've seen from them. We haven't really seen that since January. But they've had a fantastic season. They've qualified for the Champions League. I think they can be very happy. But I think it would have been a real message to send to Europe to say, hey, we've beaten Bayern Munich.
One game that really caught my attention was FC Köln versus Leverkusen. Now, I remember very, very vividly that last year, on 21st of December, these two teams again played and the match ended with a draw 1-1. And we had a repeat of this weekend whereby they drew 2-2. What is your take on this?
It was a very entertaining game. Leverkusen were under a lot of pressure going into the game. They knew that if they lost, they would be worrying about relegation on the final day, which is a crazy thing to say for a team like Leverkusen. But they got it together in the second half, came back from 2 goals down to make it 2-2. The atmosphere was very good. Cologne's fans were very excited, were very up for the game. And maybe in the end, Leverkusen will feel like they should have won it. But a point was enough for them. Mm-hmm. They don't need to worry about relegation anymore. They can start looking forward to next season, hoping it will be better.
Well, they don't have to worry about relegation. That's quite a soothing moment. But let's take it a little further. Hamburg once again made it. I mean, they really have a good tick. Every time they're almost getting to relegation, they manage to get out of it. And I mean, they've had their record that they've never been out of the first Bundesliga. And that leaves us now with FC Ingolstadt and Darmstadt. Now, Ingolstadt is rather a newcomer to the first Bundesliga. They haven't been there for a long time. What can we expect?
In Ingolstadt, having been relegated on the weekend against Freiburg, I think they will be dealing with a mixed set of emotions. I think they'll want to prove their quality on the final day, absolutely. For Hamburg, though, it will be very interesting to see, because scoring such a late goal against Schalke, making sure that they go into the final day still within a chance of surviving, is so important for them.
DW's Jonathan Harding. Now, Abu, when I was looking at our Facebook page, I saw that one topic that was trending is Kenyans and maize. Remember, maize is Kenya's staple food, and people have been talking quite a lot about that topic there.
Actually, it's a suspicion that's going on there. Kenyans are suspicious because a shipment of maize from Mexico arrived within 3 days after the
3 days.
Yeah, 3 days. So people are surprised, like, how is this happening? Others are saying it didn't come from South America. From Mexico, it came from South Africa. Anyways, let me read the response from you. Nganga, the blogger, said, Kenyan men who have been avoiding Mexican soap operas can't avoid the Mexican maize now. And then he made this comment. Tormenta and Mahidi Ella Obusuma.
He's trying to practice some
Spanish
there. Don't
ask me what that means there.
Interesting. There, Kenyans are hungry. They are not interested with the source of maize imports. All they want is something to eat. Stop NASA cheap politics. That's from Captain Machukus.
Absolutely. And he said, Captain Machuk said, Kenyans are hungry. They're not interested with the source of maize imports. All they want is something to eat.
Yeah, but which Kenyans is he talking about?
All Kenyans.
All Kenyans, excuse me. It can be all Kenyans, excuse me. You gotta take me out of that list.
Actually, it's an intense conversation between Captain Machuk on GK on Twitter there. And we have a final response from William Ko, who said, how much is Uhuru paying you to yap here?
I like the point of, you know, bringing in the politicians there, because Kenya is gearing up for elections in just a few months. Yeah, we have another one here from Wiki Otieno who says, you were bold, or are you among the 36 Jubilee bloggers? Thank you for listening to Africa Link. That's all we had for you today.